Welcome to the Swiss Info Podcast, a roundup of the biggest stories from this week in Switzerland, plus the business and cultural highlights.
Hello and thanks for downloading Swiss Info's podcast for August the 29th. I'm Thomas Stevens. Dangerous mountains, misunderstood ministers, and the canton with the smallest Mennonit all feature this week, as does this. Find out why you shouldn't be afraid of the big bad wolf in Switzerland later on. But first this. On August the 24th, 8 climbers, 4 Germans, 3 Swiss and 1 Austrian died in the deadliest avalanche this year in the Swiss, French or Italian Alps. It was the worst in the French Alps since 1998. The avalanche began at around 3 a.m. after a massive block of glacier ice, known as a serac, cracked off the side of Mont Blanc. It hit a path often used by groups heading for the summit of Mont Blanc. Mountain experts told Swiss Info that high-altitude avalanches are not that unusual at this time of year. Chamonix guide Christophe Bourloyen, who was among the rescuers, said,
"It's perfect conditions to climb Mont Blanc this day, and it's like, you know, a serac fall, it's like an earthquake. It could happen any time."
In July 2007, 6 Swiss Army recruits died in an avalanche on the Jungfrau in the Bernese Oberland, the worst accident in 15 years for the Swiss Armed Forces. However, accidents on Mont Blanc are rare and down to bad luck, according to experts. Bourloyen said,
"It's true that it's very popular, it's very busy, but compared to how many people try to climb Mont Blanc, there's just few accidents on this mountain. You know, in summer in Chamonix, some days we have over 100,000 people a day."
The Swiss Alpine Club said that this year's mixed summer weather had resulted in an average summer high season in Switzerland in terms of accidents and deaths. Last year, 28 people died in the Swiss Alps in June and July, compared with 17 since the beginning of June. Thomas Kenner, spokesman for REGA, Switzerland's leading air rescue organisation, told Swiss Info,
"Like always, it's very much related to the weather conditions. I tend to say it's every year the same. That means when we have good weather conditions, there are more people going out, to the more mountaineers, going more climbers going out. That means as this summer was not such a perfect weather season, we with REGA, we also felt this, let's put it this way. So that means that our figures weren't so high as last year. So it was a decrease of interventions."
But looking back over the past 5 years, REGA is being called out increasingly often to rescue people in the mountains.
"Yes, the tendency is upwards because everyone thinks, okay, I've got my mobile, I can call when I have a problem, you know. It's much more easy to reach us. Many people think that gives them security, you know. They go up and think, if they have a problem, I can call REGA. They have good material, they're good prepared, but sometimes they tend to try to do too much, you know, and not to check the weather conditions and things like that."
Also this week, Swiss Foreign Minister Micheline Calmy-Rey attracted negative publicity after mentioning Osama bin Laden and dialogue in the same sentence in a speech to ambassadors on August the 25th. Despite a speedy clarification from her ministry press office, the question of what the minister said and what she meant by it has provoked intense debate. The speech to the annual conference of Swiss ambassadors addressed the issue of holding discussions with groups that might be considered by some as beyond the pale. In her opening remarks, Calmy-Rey took aim at those who take the moral high ground. She gave a list of parties involved in conflict, rogue states, and groups that could never be engaged in dialogue, according to such finger-waggers.
"Aujourd'hui, les moralistes ont la part belle.
If their advice had been followed, Israel would never have opened dialogue with the Palestinians, the King of Nepal with the Maoists, the Colombian government with FARC. So is it necessary to listen to those right-thinking people? Or should we seek dialogue without discrimination, even going so far as to sit down at a table with Bin Laden?"
Calmy-Rey's statements formed the basis of an international news agency report claiming that she favoured dialogue with Al-Qaeda and Bin Laden, information that was then picked up by numerous foreign publications. Not so, according to the Foreign Ministry clarification that appeared the following day. But a quick look at some headlines from French newspaper Le Monde to a host of online publications covering the Middle East showed that the message was already out there. In the Swiss dailies, Le Temps asked why Calmy-Ray took the risk of mentioning the head of Al-Qaeda.
Should she not have anticipated that such provocation would make ink flow, that she would provoke misunderstandings and even tensions?
Der Bund went so far as to say that Calmy-Ray mentioned the terrorist as an attention-seeking device.
Calmy is no master of diplomacy. She has managed yet again to distract from the substance, set off a storm about the style, and make Switzerland look odd abroad.
The Neue Zürcher Zeitung said it was obviously wrong of the media to interpret the minister's comments as an offer of talks with bin Laden, but expressed surprise at how the speech got through internal checks.
The traditional planned speeches for the annual ambassador's conference are usually checked by numerous people for every comma and every imaginable translation error.
This is not the first time that Calmy-Ray has been at the centre of a political storm. A controversial visit to Iran in March, where she was present at the signing of a Swiss-Iranian natural gas purchase agreement, wearing a veil into the bargain, drew sharp criticism from Israel and the United States. Staying in international politics, former British Prime Minister Harold Wilson's most famous contribution to Anglo-Swiss relations was probably his description of Swiss bankers as the gnomes of Zurich. However, research published this week by Zurich University's Institute of Anatomy, which compared the height and weight of men in Switzerland's 26 cantons, showed that Zurich dwellers are in fact taller and heavier than the national average. Jessica Dacey reveals who are the real alpine pygmies.
At an average of 1.76 meters, men in the central Swiss canton of Appenzell Inner Rhodes are 2.8 centimeters shorter than men in Basel and are officially the gnomes of Switzerland. Using the 2005 census of the armed forces, researchers gathered data from more than 28,000 male conscripts. Frank Rulli, one of the researchers, reacted to the results.
We are expecting them, but we are still surprised to see it, especially to this extent, knowing that Switzerland has a reputation of being on the highest socioeconomic status and being an egalitarian society and so on. So that's a bit of a surprise.
The study has also revealed that the average Swiss man has grown by 10 centimeters in the past century. Average height of conscripts rose from 1.69 meters in 1916 to 1.78 meters in 2005. Whether this gives them a leg up in life, Ruhi leaves open.
There are studies saying that if you are taller, you are more successful in life. You get more income and so on. But it's always difficult to say which one is the egg and which is the chicken, you know. Whether you actually, because you are taller, you earn more, or whether it is the opposite, whether because you are... you earn more, you are getting taller, you know. But definitely, it's probably, especially for males, it's still the fact that in society it's better to be tall than small.
Jessica Dacey reporting. And now, an even lighter look at this week's news. A hungry squirrel caused all sorts of problems in Zurich on August the 24th. By gnawing through some power cables and suffering an electric shock of an eye-watering 150,000 volts, it caused the longest blackout in the history of Swiss-German television. All the more annoying to viewers and executives was that the furry animal managed to disrupt the Beijing Olympics closing ceremony and the Formula One motor racing, two television ratings toppers. The power cut also affected 6,000 houses in several quarters of Zurich, as well as two tram lines. "We've never had such a long gap in programming," lamented a television spokesman. The roasted rodent was found and displayed in tabloid newspapers the following morning. Also expected to shock is Madonna. The 50-year-old Queen Mother of Pop is playing the Swiss leg of her Sticky and Sweet World Tour at the Dubendorf former military airfield near Zurich on August the 30th. Some people travel light. Madonna does not. 30 lorries have already arrived, and among the essential items are 69 guitars, 4 large fridges, 3,500 outfits for the crew, and 1,000 kilograms of ice. Madonna herself will jet into Switzerland for just a few hours for the show, which is expected to attract 70,000 fans. Swiss Federal Railways has already announced that it will run 130 extra trains to cope with the demand. Now it's time for Out and About, where roving Swiss Info journalists report from the far corners of Switzerland. Wolves, which have returned to Switzerland after more than a century's absence, have had a bad press, especially over their attacks on sheep. But experts say that the wolf is still largely misunderstood and, unlike in fairy tales, poses no danger to humans. A new project has been launched to try to increase understanding of the animals. Isabel Leibold-Johnson reports.
Wolves started to reappear in the late 1990s, having wandered in from neighbouring countries. There are currently thought to be 7 in the country. However, their periodic attacks on livestock have caused concern, and although a protected species, there have been cases of wolves being shot. The Association of Swiss Zoos is convinced that man and wolf can live together peacefully, and launched a project on August the 26th to help increase understanding of the animals. Alex Rubel, director of Zurich Zoo, one of the organisations participating in the scheme, says people are still afraid of wolves.
The wolves don't attack people if they're not really weak. You know, in Siberia and Russia, when you're really frozen, that might happen. But here in Switzerland, there is no wolf attacking a human. Actually, wolves are very shy. They hide, and so it took a long time. Wolves are here back now since almost 10 years. And very, very few people have ever seen a wolf.
Rubel says that when wolves, usually young lone males, first come to a new area, they sometimes kill sheep. But once they have got used to their surroundings, they mainly feed on wild animals. The presence of a wolf was confirmed in the Surselva region of Graubünden in eastern Switzerland in 2002, says gamekeeper Kasper Sachs.
He's still there, but doesn't cause any problems. In the summer, he always keeps to the higher areas and comes down in the winter.
Flocks are now guarded by dogs and herded into pens at night, so there are no longer any sheep attacks. These are measures that should be encouraged, says Rubel, even if they might take time and money to be accepted. Other countries have already come to terms with wolves.
There is a well-established population in Italy, in the Abruzzian mountains, where people live for a very long time already together with the wolves, and it works very, very well, and that's what we're trying to install here too.
That was Isabel Leibold-Johnson. Thanks for listening. Learn more about these stories at swissinfo.ch. Turn on, tune in, and download again next week for more Swiss news and views. I'm Thomas Stevens.